A logo. In outer space, the Earth appears, filmed in black and white, behind the words MCA Universal Home Video. Another logo. A black and white Earth appears in space behind the words Universal International. Edward Mule in charge of production. Now, a child's hands open a cigar box. Inside lie two carved dolls, crayons, marbles, and other childhood treasures. Titles appear. Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch. The child selects a fat, dark crayon and rubs it over a sheet of lined paper. The rubbing reveals an impression of the words, "To Kill a Mockingbird." With Brock Peters, James Anderson, Robert Duvall, and William Wyndham. Our view travels past a clear glass marble, a mechanical pencil, and a six-pointed jack. The child colors in a picture drawn in the center of the lined paper. A marble swirled with color rolls away, past a pair of eyeglasses, into a solid, dark marble. Titles continue, introducing Mary Badham as Scout and Philip Alford as Jem, based on Harper Lee's novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. A faceless pocket watch lies beside a length of ball chain. A tattered ribbon decorates the watch stem. Following the chain leads us to a child-sized harmonica, the size of a matchbox, another swirled marble, and a silver whistle. Our view settles on the whistle. Music by Elmer Bernstein. The child's drawing shows a bird in flight. The fat crayon drops back into the box as titles continue. Screenplay by Horton Foote. The drawing tears. Produced by Alan J. Pakula. Directed by Robert Mulligan. Now our view drifts through the branches of a leafy tree and settles on a small town street. A newspaper carrier passes a farmer driving a mule-driven cart.
Macomb was a tired old town, even in 1932 when I first knew it. Somehow it was hotter then. Men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning. Ladies bathed before noon. After their 3 o'clock naps, and by nightfall were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. The day was 24 hours long, but it seemed longer. There was no hurry, for there was nowhere to go, nothing to buy, no money to buy it with, although Macomb County had recently been told that it had nothing to fear but fear itself. That summer, I was 6 years old.
Oh, morning, miss.
My daddy's getting dressed. Would you like me to call him for you?
No, miss, I don't care to bother.
Well, it's no bother, Mr. Cunningham. Very happy to see you. Attica?
The girl in outgrown overalls bounds up the back steps. Her father appears in the kitchen doorway in a necktie and open vest.
Good morning, Walter.
Morning, Mr. Finch. I didn't want to bother you none. I brought you these here hickory nuts as part of my entailment.
Well, I thank you. The collards we had last week were delicious.
Well, morning.
Morning.
Scout straddles the banister and leans on her father's shoulder.
Scout, I think maybe next time Mr. Cunningham comes, you better not call me.
Well, I thought you'd want to thank him.
Oh, I do. I think it embarrasses him to be thanked.
He sets down the sack of nuts. Scout follows him to the front porch.
Why does he bring you all this stuff?
He's paying me. There's some legal work I did for him.
Why does he pay you like this?
That's the only way he can. He has no money.
Is he poor?
Yes.
Atticus looks over the newspaper.
Are we poor?
We are indeed.
We as poor as the Cunninghams?
No, not exactly. Cunninghams are country folks, farmers. Crash hit them the hardest.
A black woman comes out the back door.
Gal, call your brother.
Atticus? Jim's up in the tree. He says he won't come down until you agree to play football for the Methodists.
Atticus adjusts his glasses and looks up in the tree.
Jim?
Scout's straight bangs cover her forehead.
Son, why don't you come on down out of there now and have your breakfast? California has a good one. Hot biscuits.
No, sir. Not till you agree to play football for the Mets.
Oh, son, I can't do that. I explained to you I'm too old to get out there. After all, I'm the only father you have. Wouldn't want me to get out there and get my head knocked off, would you?
I ain't coming down.
Suit yourself.
10-year-old Jim looks through the branches. A neighbor steps outside.
Morning.
Morning, Miss Hardy.
What's going on over there?
I'm having a terrible time, Miss Marty. Jim's staying up in the tree until Atticus agrees to play football for the Methodists. And Atticus says he's too old.
Every time we want him to do something, he's too old.
He's too old for anything.
He can do plenty of things.
You be good, children. Mind Carol. Morning, Morty.
Morning, Atticus.
He won't let me have a gun, and he'll only play touch football with me. Never tackle.
He can make somebody's will so airtight you can't break it. You count your blessings and stop complaining, both of you. Thank your stars he has a sense to act his age.
Jim, he is pretty old.
Well, I can't help that.
Jim spots a small boy crouched in a vegetable garden next door.
Hey.
Jim and Scout stand on the edge of their treehouse platform.
Hey, yourself.
I'm Charles Baker Harris. I can read. You got anything needs reading, I can do it.
How old are you?
4 and a half. Going on 7.
Well, no wonder then. Scout's been reading since she was born. And she don't start school the next month. You look right puny for going on 7.
I'm little, but I'm old. Folks call me Dale. I'm from Meridian, Mississippi. And I'm spending 2 weeks next door with my Aunt Stephanie.
They climb down.
My mama worked for a photographer in Meridian. She entered my picture in the beautiful child contest and won $5 on it. She gave the money to me and I went to the picture show 20 times with her. Our mama's dead, but we got a daddy. Where's your daddy? I haven't got one. Is he dead? No. Well, if he's not dead, you've got one, haven't you?
Dill has jug ears and buck teeth.
Push, Gail.
She scowls. The black woman comes outside with a clean shirt in her hand and undresses Scout.
Dill, this is Calpurnia.
Pleased to know you, Dill.
Pleased to know you. My daddy owns the L&N Railroad. He's gonna let me run the engine all the way to New Orleans.
Is that so?
Scout changes her shirt herself.
He says I can invite anybody.
The children watch a man pass their house on the sidewalk.
There goes the meanest man that ever took a breath of life.
Why is he the meanest man?
Well, one thing. He has a boy named Boo that he keeps chained to a bed in the house over yonder.
They run for a look at the Radley's house. Jim is a head taller than Dill, who wears white shorts, button-down shirt, and black socks.
See, he lives over there. Boo only comes out at night. When you're asleep, and it's pitch dark. When you wake up at night, you can hear him.
Once I heard him scratching on our screen door, but he was gone by the time Atticus got there.
Wonder what he does in there. Wonder what he looks like.
Well, judging from his tracks, he's about 6 and a half feet tall. He eats raw squirrels and all the cats he can catch. There's a long, jagged scar that runs all the way across his face. His teeth are yellow and rotten, his eyes are popped, and he drools most of the time.
Oh, I don't believe you.
Dill, what are you doing here?
My Lord, Aunt Stephanie, you almost gave me a heart attack.
Dill, I don't want you playing around that house over there. There's a maniac lives there, and he's dangerous.
See? I was just trying to warn him about Boo, but he wouldn't believe me.
Well, you'd just better believe him, Mr. Dill Harris.
Tell him about the time Boo tried to kill his papa.
I was standing in my yard one day when his mama come out yelling, "He's killing us all." Turned out that Boo was sitting in the living room cutting up the paper for his scrapbook. And when his daddy come by, he reached over with his scissors, stabbed him in his leg, pulled him out, and went right on cutting the paper. They wanted to send him to an asylum, but his daddy said no Radley's going to any asylum. So they locked him up in the basement of the courthouse till he nearly died of the damp. And his daddy brought him back home. There he is to this day, sitting over there with his scissors. Lord knows what he's doing or thinking.
Later, Jem hangs inside a tire swing and sways like a pendulum under the tree branch.
8, 9, 10. Come on, Scout, it's 5 o'clock.
Scout comes out from under the porch with Dill at her heels.
Where you going?
Time to meet Atticus.
I call your daddy Atticus.
Good, Jem does.
Why does he?
I don't know. He just started to ever since he began talking.
She spits on her scraped knee and runs after Jem.
Wait, stop. Mr. Bowes is on her porch. Listen, no matter what she says to you, don't answer her back. There's a Confederate pistol in her lap under her shawl, and she'll kill you quick as look at you. Come on.
The boys stride past without looking. Scout shoves her hands in her pockets and glances at the white-haired woman on the porch.
Hey, Mr. Bowes.
Don't you say hey to me, you ugly girl. You say good afternoon, Mr. Bowes. You come over here when I'm talking to you. You come over here.
They meet Atticus up the road.
Do you listen
Atticus,
to me when
this
I'm
is
talking
Jill.
To you?
This is
Jill. Don't your daddy teach you to respect old people? You
Atticus sweeps off his hat as he strolls up her walk.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bowes. My, you look like a picture this afternoon.
You don't say a picture of what?
My goodness gracious, look at your flowers. Have you ever seen anything more beautiful? Miss DeBose, the gardens at Bellingrath have nothing to compare with your flowers.
Oh, I don't think they're as nice as last year.
Oh, I can't agree with you.
So she forgets. Be mean.
I think that your yard is going to be the showplace of this town. Well, grand seeing you, Mr. Bowes.
That night, in Scout's bedroom, a breeze stirs her sheer lace curtains. Atticus sits on the edge of her bed while she reads aloud.
I had two cats, which I brought ashore on my first raft. And I had a dog.
She shuts the book.
Atticus, do you think Boo Radley ever really comes and looks in my window at night? Jem says he does. This afternoon when we were over by their
Scout,
house...
I told you and Jem to leave those poor people alone. I want you to stay away from their house and stop tormenting them.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that's all the reason for tonight, honey. It's getting late.
What time is it?
8:30.
May I see you what?
Atticus's dark hair falls over his high forehead. He wears a necktie and a sweater over his suit vest. Scout yawns and holds out her hand for the round pocket watch. Pressing its stem, she opens the watch case and reads the inscription inside.
To Atticus, my beloved husband. Atticus, Jim says this watch is going to belong to him someday.
That's right.
What?
Customary for the boy to have his father's watch.
What are you gonna give me?
I don't know that I have much else of value that belongs to me.
He tucks the watch away in his vest pocket.
But there's a pearl necklace. There's a ring that belonged to your mother. And I put them away, and they're to be yours.
Scout smiles and stretches her hands over her head. Wrapping his arms around her, Atticus kisses her cheek. She hugs his neck.
Good night, Scout.
Good night.
She cuddles a stuffed rabbit to her face as Atticus tucks her in. Then he steps into an adjoining room.
Good night, Jim.
Good night.
In his room, Jim tucks himself under a sheet and rolls over. The outside porch light falls across Scout's face on her pillow. Her dark eyes blink open.
Jim? Yeah?
She lies still with her back to the joining door.
How old was that when Mama died?
Two.
How old were you?
Six.
Old as I am now? Mama pretty?
Mm-hmm.
Mama nice?
Mm-hmm. On the front porch, outside their windows, Atticus sits on a wooden swing.
Yeah.
One hand props up his head while the other stretches across the back of the empty space beside him.
Do you miss her?
Atticus stares at the floor. Two deep lines crease his forehead between the thick eyebrows of his brooding face.
Good evening, Atticus.
Good evening, Judge.
The judge wears a summer suit, vest, and bow tie.
Rather warm, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
He fans himself with his hat, then rests it on his knee and stares into the dark.
How's Mrs. Taylor?
She's fine, fine, thank you.
The judge's skin hangs loosely on his face.
Atticus, you heard about Tom Robinson?
Yes, sir.
Grand jury will get around to charging him tomorrow.
He idly taps his fingers against the crown of the hat in his lap.
I was thinking about appointing you to take his case.
Atticus arches an eyebrow above his glasses and blinks.
Oh, I realize you're very busy these days with your practice. And your children need a great deal of your time.
Atticus manages a tight nod.
Yes, sir.
Pressing his lips together, he takes several short, deep breaths. The judge waits and watches.
I'll take the case.
I'll send a boy over for you tomorrow when his hearing comes up.
The judge glances across the yard.
Well, I'll see you tomorrow, Atticus.
Yes, sir.
Atticus remains seated as the judge leaves.
And thank you.
Yes, sir.
The following morning, Scout, Jem, and Dill Harris push open the back screen door and stand on the steps.
Hey, Jem. I bet you a gray ghost against two Tom Swifts. You wouldn't go any farther than Boo Radley's gate.
Jem walks away into the yard.
Scared, too, ain't you? I ain't scared. I go past Boo Radley's house nearly every day of my life.
How is running?
You hush up, Scout.
Soon afterward, Jem rolls the untied tire swing into the road.
No, Dale!
Me first!
You gotta let Dale be first!
No, me!
Oh, let her be first. All right, get in.
Scout sits inside the tire with her knees in front of her.
Right. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Let her go.
Jem gives the tire a push, and Scout turns over and over inside with her hands and feet braced in front of her. She and the tire roll across the wide street, headed right for the Radley porch. She bounces against the stoop. As she dizzily shakes her head, Jem drags her away.
Come on, Scout!
Jem suddenly charges the Radley porch, smacks the screen door, and races off again.
Run for your life, Scout! Come on, Dale!
At the safety of their own porch, the breathless children collapse against a chicken wire fence.
Now who's a coward? You tell them about this back in
Meridian County, Mr. Dilhash.
I'll tell you what let's do. Let's go down to the courthouse and see the room that they locked Boo up in. My aunt says it's bat infested and he nearly died from the mildew. Come on, I bet they got chains and instruments of torture down there.
Later in town, they pass some men playing checkers.
Jim Finch?
Yes, sir?
If you're looking for your daddy, he's inside the courthouse.
Thank you, sir, but we're not looking
for... Thank you, Mr. Townsend, sir.
He pushes Scout on ahead.
What's your daddy doing in the courthouse? He's a lawyer, and he has a case. The grand jury's charging his client today. I heard something about it last night when Judge Taylor came over.
Let's go watch.
No, Dill. He wouldn't like that.
Inside the courthouse, they chase Dill up the stairs.
Dill, wait a minute.
At the top of the landing, Dill finds a closed door with high windows.
Is that the courtroom?
They peek through the crack between the double doors.
I can't see anything.
Shh.
You all lift me up so I can see what's going on.
All right. Make a saddle, Scout.
They link their hands, palms up, and lift Dill by the feet to the window.
Not much is happening. The judge looks like he's asleep.
Scout and Jem struggle to hold him up.
I see your daddy and a colored man. The colored man looks to me like he's crying.
And I see him.
I wonder what he's done to cry about.
What's going on?
There's a whole lot of men sitting together on one side. And one man keeps pointing at the colored man and yelling. Taking the colored man away. Where's Atticus?
Atticus exits from another door.
I can't see your daddy now either.
Atticus marches out in a white linen suit.
I wonder where in the world...
Scout Jim. What in the world are you doing here?
Hello, Atticus.
They hang their heads.
What are you doing here?
We came down to find out where Boo Riley was locked up. We want to see the bats.
Atticus rubs his head.
We want you all back home right away.
Yes, sir.
Run along now. I'll see you there for dinner.
A man leaves the courtroom wearing denim overalls and a rumpled shirt. The brim of his sweat-stained hat hangs low over his face. He blocks Atticus's way on the landing.
Hey, howdy, Cap.
Atticus eyes him gravely.
Mr. Ewell.
Captain, I'm real sorry they picked you to defend that nigga that raped Mama Yeller. I don't know why I didn't kill him myself instead of going to the sheriff. Well, it saved you and the sheriff and the taxpayers lots of trouble.
Excuse me, Mr. Ewell, I'm very busy.
Hey, Captain, somebody told me just now that they thought that you believed Tom Robinson's story again, Iron. You know what I said?
He cocks his head.
I said you wrong, man. You dead wrong. Mr. Finch ain't taking this story against Iron.
His grin disappears.
Well, it was wrong, wasn't it?
I've been appointed to defend Tom Robinson. Now that he's been charged, that's what I intend to do.
You've taken his...
Excuse me, Mr. Ewell.
Ewell's jaw falls open. He stares over the landing as Atticus departs.
What kind of man are you? You got children of your own.
Another night. Scout sits in the porch rocker upside down with her feet in the air.
Hey, Jim. Jim?
Dill appears in Aunt Stephanie's yard. Jem hops off the porch and runs to meet him with Scout close behind. He unhooks the gate to the vegetable garden.
I think we ought to stay right here in Miss Stephanie's yard.
You don't have to come along, Angel May.
The boys trot down the sidewalk a few houses to the Radleys' weathered picket fence. When Scout catches up to them, both Dill and Jem clutch the unpainted pickets and stare over them at the dark Radley porch.
What are you gonna do?
Jem scowls with locked jaw.
Gonna look in a window at the Radley house and see if we can get a look at Boo Radley. Come on, Dill.
Hunching down, they pass another side of the fenced-in lawn.
Jem, please, I'm scared.
Then go home if you're scared. I swear, Scout, you act more like a girl all the time. Come on, Dill.
Wait for me, I'm coming.
Scurrying ahead, they drop to their knees on the sidewalk. Jem's forehead creases.
We'll go around back.
and crawl under the high wire fence at the rear of the ready lot. I don't believe we can be seen from there.
He grabs Dill's arm and Scout grabs his. Through the fence, they see an empty porch swing grazing the side of the house. The two-story Radley house stands in darkness, except for a light in one lower window. A dead tree with a gnarled trunk and leafless branches dominates the front yard. Around the back, the children crawl on hands and knees to a vegetable patch surrounded by chicken wire. Jem holds the fence wire off the ground.
Come on.
Scout and Dill slip under the fencing, then hold it high out of Jem's way.
Hold it up for me.
Once inside the garden, they crawl farther, past leafy collared heads, to the wood and wire gate. Jem leads the way, followed by the white-suited Dill in socks and sandals, then Scout in overalls and high-topped sneakers.
Don't make a sound.
Watching the house, he pulls the gate. Jem stiffens, then eases the gate shut. He wets his lips.
Spit on me.
They coat the hinges.
All right.
He tries it again, wider this time, and nods his approval.
Jim, shh. Spit some more. All right.
He pulls the gate in toward them, and the three children slip through into the yard. Jem squats on his heels and pulls the gate shut again, then stares at the house. The rough clapboards are stained and dark. Laundry hangs upside down on a clothesline. They squint through the darkness at the shadowy porch. Jem darts forward with the others directly behind. At the porch steps, they drop to their knees. Dill looks up and down the length of the porch, then looks to Jem. Jem begins to climb the four short steps on his hands and knees. For a moment, he looks back at Scout and Dill, then continues on his way. With the porch now above their heads, they see only his rear and the bottoms of his shoes as he nears the house. Scout darts her eyes at Dill. His large teeth push apart his full lips. On the porch, a wooden basket of firewood blocks Jem's approach to a back window. Scout's mouth falls open as her brother moves it aside and draws closer to the outer wall. Inch by inch, he works his way forward on the knees of his overalls. When he's as close as he can get, Jem nearly touches his nose to the windowsill as he peers into the lifeless house. He ducks back down, then slowly rises again. Around the side of the house, a shadow appears, man-sized with long arms and big hands. On the ground, Scout freezes, helplessly watching as it stalks closer to Jem. She looks away. Dill drops his face into his hands. Jem's eyes widen as the shadow's hand reaches for him. He crouches himself into a ball in the shadows. Dill and Scout keep their eyes covered. The shadow pauses, draws back, then returns around the side of the house. Jem bolts from the porch for the vegetable patch, the children scrambling after him. He yanks up the loose chicken wire. First Scout, then Dill slither underneath it into the alley. When Jem tries to wriggle himself under, he gets trapped. A wire is twisted in the denim of his overalls.
Scout! Scout!
She runs back to the garden fence to untangle the twisted wire. Jem unhooks his overall straps and flips onto his back. As Scout and Dill tug on his pant legs, he wriggles free. They tear down the back alley to their own yard. At the Finch's yard, the children slide through a loose board. Jem hurdles a low wall and hunkers behind the garage, then helps the others over. Scout puts her arm around Dill as he doubles over and covers his mouth. Jem checks behind them for pursuers. Scout frowns at his undershorts.
What are you gonna do for pains, Jem?
I don't know.
still braces against the garage wall, then looks desperately to Jem.
Come on in now.
I better go.
Deal?
Coming out, Stephanie! So long. I'll see you next summer.
So long, so long.
Deal?
I'm coming.
I'm going back after my pants.
Please, Jem, come on in the house. I can't go in without my pants. Well, then I'm going to call Atticus.
Do not. Now, listen. Atticus ain't never whipped me since I can remember, and I plan to keep it that way.
Well, then I'm going with you.
You ain't. Then you stay right here. I'll be back before you can count to 10.
He takes off, the legs of his shorts flapping.
Jim!
He slips through the loose board, letting it swing behind him. Scout steadies herself.
One, two... Three, four.
Jem? Scout? Come on in.
She swallows.
Five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10.
She tightens her lips.
11, 12, 13, 14.
The fence board swings wide and Jem returns, bare-legged, with overalls in hand.
Jim!
He covers her mouth and points a stern finger, then yanks his overalls on over his shoes. While he gets dressed, Scout fidgets, nervously biting her upper lip. Aunt Stephanie runs out in her bathrobe. Up the road, Mr. Radley holds a shotgun.
Me what's going on.
Mr. Radley shot at a prowler out in his college.
A prowler? Oh, Marty. Well, whoever it was won't be back anytime soon. Mr. Radley must have scared them out of their wits.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night, Atticus.
Oh, scared the living daylights out of me.
Jem, now dressed, walks to the front yard with Scout as their father returns.
Come on now, the excitement's over. Time for bed.
They stay where they are.
Jem?
Before she goes inside, Scout takes another look at the dark Radley house. Morning in Macomb. Miss Maudie crosses yards to the Finch's house. Inside the kitchen, Calpurnia serves the family breakfast.
Morning!
Atticus brightens.
Good morning, Miss Maudie.
Morning, Maudie.
Came to see Jean Louise ready for her first day at school.
Hey, Scout?
Morning,
Miss Maudie.
Scout? What are you going to do with yourself this morning, Calpurnia, with both children at school?
I don't know. And that's the truth. I was thinking about that just now. Scout?
She sets down the coffee pot.
Scout? Did you hear me, Scout? Now hurry.
Cal returns from the hall, flashing a brief smile at the family. Jem, in a necktie, grins. Scout enters reluctantly, tugging at the shoulders of a crisp new dress.
Hey, bud, look at Scout!
Miss Maudie whacks Jem as Scout ducks into the hall again. Atticus smiles proudly.
Come on in here, Scout.
Miss Maudie smiles. She wears a high-brushed hairdo and a leopard print dress.
Have your breakfast.
With her head held down, Scout hops quickly into her seat. As she leans on her elbow, her thick hair falls forward and hides her face.
I think your dress is mighty becoming, honey.
Now, don't go tugging at that dress, Scout. You want to have it all wrinkled before you even get to school?
She bares her teeth at Cal's back.
I still don't see why I have to wear a darn old dress.
You'll get used to it.
I'm ready!
Oh, Jem. Jem. It's half an hour before school starts. Sit back down. Wait for your sister.
Jem wears wool knickers and a white dress shirt.
Well, hurry up, Scout. I'm trying to.
Well, come on. It's your first day. You want to be late?
She throws her fork down in her bacon and eggs.
I'm ready. Come on.
Scout snaps up her books, drops them, collects them, then kisses Atticus.
Bye.
Jim zooms back inside, grabs his books, tied with a strap, and zooms out again. The adults stand in the kitchen doorway and watch the children go. Later, in the schoolyard, students hurry outside with lunch sacks and pails in their hands. Scout breaks into a run after a blonde boy in overalls and tackles him to the ground. She pushes his face into the dirt. As a crowd of children gathers around them, she pounds his back with her fists. Jim appears and separates them.
Cut that out! What do you think you're doing?
She flails against Jim as he tries to hold her back.
He let me start off on the wrong foot. I was trying to explain to that darn-nutty teacher why he didn't have no money for his lunch. And she got sore at me.
Jim holds her back.
Stop it! Stop it!
The crowd starts to break up. Scout glares hotly at Walter, who hangs his head, but remains where he stands.
Your daddy, Mr. Walter Cunningham from Old Sarum?
Walter nods yes, still looking down.
Well, come home and have dinner with us, Walter. We'd be glad to have you.
Walter shakes his head vigorously.
Well, our daddy's a friend of your daddy's.
Jim rubs his round face.
Well, Scout here's crazy. She won't fight you no more.
Later, in the dining room, Atticus hands Walter a full plate.
That's a dinner that you enjoy.
Yes, sir. I don't know when I've had a rose. We've been having squirrels and rabbits lately. My pa and I go hunting in our spare time.
You got a gun of your own?
Uh-huh.
How long you had a gun?
Oh, a year or so.
Jim glowers at Atticus, who feigns no notice.
Can I have the syrup, please?
Well, certainly, son. Cal! You bring in the syrup dish, please?
Yes, sir.
How old were you when you got your first gun, Atticus?
13 or 14.
He fills their plates with food.
I remember when my daddy gave me that gun. He told me that I should never point at anything in the house. And that he'd rather I'd shoot at tin cans in the backyard. But he said that sooner or later he supposed the temptation to go after birds would be too much. And that I could shoot all of the blue jays I wanted, if I could hit them. But to remember, it was a sin to kill a mockingbird.
Why?
Well, I reckon because mockingbirds don't do anything but make music for us to enjoy. Don't need people's gardens. Don't nest in the corn cribs. They don't do one thing but just sing their hearts out for us. How'd you like school, Scott?
All right.
Cal brings in syrup.
Well, thank you, Cal. That's for Walter.
She sets down a cut glass pitcher filled with dark syrup beside Walter's milk glass. The freckled boy lays down his fork and, holding back a smile, looks over his brimming plate. Atticus cautiously watches his children as Walter coats his cornbread, meat, and greens with a neat circle of syrup completely around his plate.
What in the same hell are you doing, Walt? But Atticus, he's gone and drowned his dinner in syrup, and now he's pouring it all over.
Scout?
What?
Come out here. I want to talk to you.
Scout gulps and slowly takes her napkin from her lap and sets it by her plate. Moments later, in the kitchen, she leans on Calpurnia's work table and looks at her hands.
That boy is your company. And if he wants to eat up that tablecloth, you let him, you hear? And if you can't act fit to eat like folks, you can just sit here and eat in the kitchen.
Cal swats Scout's backside just before she runs out of the kitchen, through the dining room, and out onto the porch, where she huddles on the wooden swing.
Scout!
Atticus follows her outside. On the bright, sunlit porch, she covers her face with her elbow.
Scout, what in the world has got into you? No, no, no.
He sits down beside her.
Because I'm not going back to school anymore.
Ah, Scout, it's just the first day.
I don't care. Everything went wrong. Teacher got mad as a devil at me and said you were teaching me to read all wrong and to stop it. Then acted like a fool and tried to give Walter Cunningham a quarter when everybody knows Cunninghams won't take nothing from nobody. Any fool could have told her that.
Well, Maybe she's just nervous after all. It's her first day, too, teaching school and being new here.
Radical.
Now, wait a minute.
She sighs as he tucks her under his arm.
You just learn a single trick, Scout. You get along a lot better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view.
Sir?
Till you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
But if I keep going to school, we can't ever read anymore.
Scout picks at her dress hem as Atticus starts the swing rocking.
Scout? You know what a compromise is?
Been in the law?
No. It's an agreement reached by mutual consent.
He turns her to face him.
Now, here's the way it works. You concede the necessity of going to school. We'll keep right on reading the same every night, just as we always have.
He nearly cracks a smile, then sobers again.
Is that a bargain?
There just didn't seem to be anyone or anything Atticus couldn't explain. Though it wasn't a talent that would arouse the admiration of any of our friends, Jem and I had to admit he was very good at that. But that was all he was good at, we thought.
Another day.
See, there he is!
At the end of the block, a dog staggers in the road. He bucks like a wild horse and bites the air. Calpurnia narrows her eyes as the dog advances.
Scout, Jem, come on inside. Come on, get in.
She closes both the screen and front doors behind them. In the hall, Calpurnia speaks into a crank-operated telephone.
Mr. Finch, this is Cal. I swear to God, there's a mad dog down the street apiece. He's coming this way.
Shortly afterward, a car arrives and Atticus steps out of the passenger side door.
There he is.
The car's driver frowns down the road at the leaping dog.
Got it all right, Mr. Finch.
Jem runs off the porch steps to meet Atticus.
Stay inside, son. Keep him in there, Cal.
The driver loads a shotgun.
He's within range. Check.
Take him, Mr. Finch.
Oh, no, Mr. Tate. He can't shoot.
Don't waste time, Hank.
For God's sake, Mr. Finch, he's got to be killed right away before he starts running. Look where he is. I can't shoot that well. You know it.
I haven't shot a gun in years.
Well, I'd feel mighty comfortable if you did now.
Atticus takes the shotgun uneasily in two hands and walks to the center of the road. The black and tan dog comes to a stop 100 feet from him. As he takes aim, Atticus lifts his eyeglasses to his forehead, but they slide back down. He lifts them again, and they slide again. Scowling, he tosses them to the dirt road. Scout and Jem watch from inside the screen door. Atticus stands rigidly, with one eye shut. The dog's feet knock out from under him, and he falls. Atticus arches an eyebrow. His children stiffen, their eyes flash widely. As Atticus empties the shells from the shotgun, Jem glances at Calpurnia, then shuts his open mouth. Atticus recovers his glasses from the road and carries the shotgun to the car. Cal and the children rush outside.
Don't go near that dog, you understand? He's just as dangerous dead as alive.
Yes. Atticus?
Yes, son.
He straightens his watch chain. Jem shrugs.
Nothing.
What's the matter, boy? Can't you talk? Didn't you know your daddy's the best shot in this county?
Oh, hush, heck. Let's get back to town. Remember now, don't go near that dog.
Yes, sir.
I'll send Zeebo out right away to pick him up.
Jem hugs his arms around a telephone pole on the curbside and watches the men depart. Later, a black sedan backs out of the Finch garage. Jem and Scout scramble out the kitchen door.
Hey, Atticus, come on the way, kid! Can we, please? Can we?
Oh, I have to go to the country on business and you'll just get tired.
Oh, no, not me. I won't get tired.
Promise to stay in the car while I go in and talk to Helen Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Not nag me about leaving if you do get tired. All right, climb in.
Jim sits in the back and Scout in the front. She lays her arm across the back of the seat as Atticus pulls out of the driveway.
Who's Helen Robinson?
She's the wife of the man I'm defending.
Later, they arrive at a house on a country road, surrounded on three sides by woods and bramble. A few black boys sit on the covered porch. Atticus parks the car and backs out of the door wearing his hat. Scout sleeps curled against the upholstered seat. Atticus smiles at one of the boys, then removes his hat.
Evening, David.
Evening.
Evening, Helen.
Evening, Mr. Finch.
I came over to tell you about my visit to the top.
Yes.
And to let you know that I got a postponement.
The adults go inside the Robinson house. The boy, David, about Jem's age, hops down from the porch and approaches the black car uncertainly. He wears overalls, a sweater vest, and bow tie. Close to the car door, he looks Jem over. Jem waves shyly. David waves back. Someone emerges from the woods, a white man in a battered hat. Bob Ewell lurches toward the car's headlights. His stubbled face shines with sweat. Jem turns to David.
Would you tell my daddy to come out here, please?
As David takes off for the house, Ewell gropes his way toward the car door. Ewell's tongue hangs loosely in his mouth. He peers curiously at Scout, asleep against the front seat, then spots Jem in the back. He falls on the closed window. The shadow of his hand crosses Jem's face. Ewell's mouth twists in his effort to stand up. Atticus appears on the Robinson porch with Helen Robinson behind him. As Atticus calmly strides into the yard, Bob Ewell staggers to the hood of the car and leans on it. The men stand with the car between them and eye each other coldly. Ewell cocks his head and draws back his upper lip.
You nigger lover.
Pushing off the car, he sidles away. Atticus settles his hat on his head and straightens the brim. He takes the wheel again, and Jem reaches over the front seat and grabs his father's shoulder.
No need to be afraid of him, son. He's all bluff.
Through the back window of Atticus's car, Jem sees Bob Ewell weaving on his feet with a half-empty bottle in his hand. He shakes his fist after the departing car. Later, at home, Atticus carries Scout inside, asleep in his arms. Jem rests one foot on the porch rocker.
There's a lot of ugly things in this world, son. I wish I could keep them all away from you.
Jem strokes the nap of his denim pants.
That's never possible.
Cal comes out the front door.
Cal, you wait till I get Scout in bed, I'll drive you home.
Yes.
The collar of Calpurnia's simple dress lies neatly outside a dark pullover sweater. She clutches her bags before her and stands by Jem, who sits in the rocking chair with his knees drawn up to his chin.
Jem, do you mind staying here with Scout till I get Cal home?
No, sir.
Night, Jem.
Night, Cal.
She gently pats his head as she passes. In the car, Cal sits in the back seat behind Atticus. Jem tightens his grip on the rocker handles, but stays seated. He nervously chews the inside of his lip as Atticus's car pulls away down the dark, deserted street. Jem's head snaps left, looking over his shoulder. Every feature on his round face tenses alertly. Shadows of branches and leaves flicker over him. With his eyes wide open in the dark, he slumps down in the chair. Jem shoots off the porch and runs down the sidewalk after the car. At the Radley fence, he stops running and presses his hand to his stomach. His arms flop to his sides. He glances at the Radley house. Wind knocks their wooden porch swing against the siding. Jem stuffs his hands in his pants pockets and walks back toward his own porch a few houses away. At the end of the rattly fence, near the old dead tree, he stops and looks back again. The swing rocks back and forth with no one on it. Jem takes a few cautious backward steps. Stops, panting through his open mouth. When he turns and surveys the empty road, a glint of metal catches his eye. Something's in the knothole of the old tree. A small charm rests on the craggy rim of the hole. With one finger, Jem taps it, then draws his hand away. He lifts the charm from the hole and examines its faint embossing of a school book. Closing his fist around the medallion, he continues backing away. The houses between the Radleys and home stand dark and eerie. He runs the rest of the way, up the porch steps and inside the house. Another day, in the schoolyard, Scout wrestles a boy in knickers.
Atticus had promised me he would wear me out if he ever heard of me fighting anymore. I was far too old and too big for such childish things. And the sooner I learned to hold in, the better off everybody would be. I soon forgot. Cecil Jacobs made me forget.
Atticus finds her waiting when he comes home.
What is it, Scott?
On the porch, she hugs her knees and buries her face in her arms.
Atticus, do you defend niggers?
He reels a bit, then takes off his hat.
Don't say nigger, Scott.
I didn't say it. Cecil Jacobs did. That's why I had to fight him.
Scout, I don't want you fighting.
I had to, Atticus.
I don't care what the reasons are. I forbid you to fight.
Yes.
She buries her face again. Atticus sits down beside her and lays aside his briefcase and hat.
Anyway, I'm simply defending a Negro. Tom Robinson. Scout, there are some things that you're not old enough to understand just yet. There's been some high talk around town to the effect that I shouldn't do much about defending this man.
She tilts her head and peeks up.
If you shouldn't be defending him, then why are you doing it?
Atticus shifts his weight on the wooden steps. His lower lip protrudes thoughtfully.
For a number of reasons. The main one is that if I didn't, I couldn't hold my head up in town. I couldn't even tell you or Jem not to do something again.
He wraps his arms around her.
You're going to hear some ugly talk about this in school. But I want you to promise me one thing. That you won't get into fights over it, no matter what they say to you.
Scout wrinkles her forehead and pushes out her lower lip, then pushes away from him.
Yes.
She leaves him on the porch. Jem appears down the road, carrying his books by their strap in his mouth. He shuffles his feet toe to heel, facing frontwards, and stiffly angles his elbows, one ahead and one behind.
What are you doing? Like an Egyptian. We were studying about him in school. Teacher says we wouldn't be no place without him.
Said so.
Cradle of civilization. They invented embalming and toilet paper.
Scout drags her feet sideways.
That's wrong, Scout.
She stops at the knotted dead tree.
She's digging feet. This way.
Look, Jill.
Two round objects like eggs rest in the knothole. When Jem draws them out, they see they're the heads of two carved figures. The girl figure wears a flowered cloth covering. The boy holds his hands in fists at his side.
Look, the boy wears hair in front of his eyebrows like you do.
Yeah, and the girl wears bangs like you.
These are us.
Mr. Radley appears, glaring at them. Wrinkled skin hangs on his gaunt, toothless face. With a sharp, pointed trowel, he slaps wet cement from a bucket into the hollow knothole. Scout and Jem stand dazed, watching the hole fill up and disappear. Mr. Radley pauses and squints at them. They hold their hands behind them, back away up the sidewalk, then break into a run. Mr. Radley, in a banded fedora and heavy work shirt, smooths the cement over the hole. That night, Jem studies the carved dolls on his moonlit windowsill. After a moment, he carefully lays them inside a cigar box.
Jem, you awake?
Go back to bed.
I can't go to sleep.
Go back to bed.
He covers the box.
What you got in the box?
Nothing. Go back to bed.
Scout looks at his quilt, now covering the box. Jem pretends to look out the window.
Come on.
His gaze shifts away from the yard. His small mouth crimps, then his dark eyes lock onto her.
If I show you, will you swear never to tell anybody?
I swear.
Cross your heart.
She does, with a single finger of her left hand, then flings up her open palm. Jem brings the box from under the quilt and solemnly lifts the lid. The carved dolls lie beside a pocket watch with a soiled face. Broken crayons and assorted marbles also fill the box.
I found all of these in the knothole of that old tree at different times.
He shows the medallion.
This is a spinning medal.
It dangles from a velvety ribbon.
You know, they used to award these in school to spelling winners before we were born.
He puts it back.
And another time, I found this.
The watch's paper face is torn. A scrap of cloth clings to the tarnished watch stem. Its second hand is missing. Jem gently replaces it in the box beside the dolls, then lifts out another treasure.
This.
A double-bladed jackknife with a tortoiseshell handle. He turns it over and over in the moonlight. Jem briefly meets his sister's gaze, then returns the knife. He bites his lip.
Scout, you know something else I never told you about that night I went back to the Radley house?
Something else? You never told me anything about that night.
Huh? You know the first time when I was getting out of my britches?
Uh-huh.
Well, they was all in a tangle, and I couldn't get them loose. Well, when I went back, though, they were folded across the fence. Sort of like they was expecting me.
Scout takes a last look at the dolls and pocket watch before Jem closes the lid on them.
It was to be a long time before Jem and I talked about Boo again.
Another day, Dill returns.
School finally ended, and summer came, and so did Dill.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ma, you're up mighty bright and early.
Oh, I've been up since 4.
Oh.
Oh, yes, I always get up at 4. It's in my blood. You see, my daddy was a railroad man till he got rich. Now he flies airplanes. One of these days, he's just gonna swoop down here at Macon, pick me up, and take me for a ride.
Later, in front of the house, Heck Tate passes in his car. He waves to Atticus, who studies his legal briefs on the porch.
Who's that in the car with Sheriff Tate?
Tom Robinson, son.
Where's he been?
In the Abbotsville jail.
Why?
The sheriff thought he'd be safer there. They're bringing him back here tonight because his trial is tomorrow.
With a cookie in one hand and a glass of lemonade in the other, Jem sits down on the stoop. That night, Dill sleeps beside him at the Finches. Jem lies awake, holding the rungs of his headboard. Atticus goes to the front door.
Oh, good evening, Heck.
Evening, Mr. Finch.
He hesitates.
Come in.
Heck Tate has a head of thick, wavy hair.
His eyes sag with deep, fleshy bags.
The news has gotten around the county about my bringing Tom Robinson back to the jail. I heard there might be trouble from that bunch out at Old Sarum.
In his bed, Jem listens. Atticus goes into the kitchen where Calpurnia, in an apron, puts away clean dishes.
Cal, if I need you to stay here tonight, can you do it?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
He walks out with a stooped posture, carrying a file folder, then pauses by the icebox.
I think you better count on staying.
Yes, sir.
They exchange a tense nod, and he leaves. Cal tightens her lips and returns to her work. Through the open bedroom door, Jem sees his father turn on a light in the hallway. Atticus carries a tall floor lamp in one hand. He shuts the light off again and leaves. Jem hops out of bed and goes to the bedroom door. He shuts it carefully, picks up his jacket, and starts to undress. Bill, now awake, sits up in bed.
What's going on?
Shh, go back to sleep.
What's going on?
Shortly afterward, in the town square, the children round a lamppost onto a paved street with only one car parked on it.
Hey, there's his car.
A village green divides the town square. Jem leads them across it to a row of hedges which hides them from view. They duck behind the thick bushes and peer through the leaves. Jem points across the next street.
See, there he is, over there.
Atticus sits outside the jail, reading under the floor lamp.
No, Scout, don't go to him. He might not like it. I just wanted to see where he was and what he was up to. He's all right. Let's go back home. Come on.
On the street now behind them, a line of black cars rolls toward the jailhouse. Atticus sits casually outside the cell with his chair tipped back on two legs and one foot propped against the step railing. He glances over his law book as the cars draw closer. Taking a deep breath, he closes the book and clenches his teeth. The children duck back into their lookout in the bushes as the cars come to a stop at the jail. The drivers and their passengers get out slowly. A man with rolled shirt sleeves hitches up his jeans. Soon a crowd forms, men with soiled hats on their heads and guns in their hands. Atticus looks them over as they close in on him. An old man in front leans his foot on the stoop and rests his hand on his hip.
He in there, Mr. Finch?
He is. He's asleep. Don't wake him.
You know what we want?
Atticus recognizes Walter Cunningham.
Get aside from that door, Mr. Finch.
Atticus's scowl hardens.
Walter. I think you ought to turn right around and go back home. Heck, Tate's around here somewhere.
No, he ain't. Heck and his bunch is out.
The children slip through the hedges and across the narrow street for a better view from behind the parked cars.
I can't see Atticus.
Scout runs toward the tight cluster of men.
Atticus!
The men part and the children face a menacing Atticus.
Hey, Atticus.
Jem, go home. And take Scout and Dill home with you.
Jem shakes his head fiercely.
Son, I said go home.
No, sir.
An old Sarum man grabs him.
Well, I'll send him home.
Scout kicks the man until Atticus stops her.
That'll do, Scout.
He puts the children on the steps with him.
Ain't nobody gonna do Jem that away.
The men's sunburned faces glare.
Now you get him out of here, Mr. Finch.
His mouth clenched, Atticus glares at the farmers, then at Jem.
Jem, I want you to please leave.
He steps back.
No, sir.
Jem?
I tell you, I ain't going.
Scout looks over the mob.
Hey, Mr. Cunningham.
His hat brim quickly hides his eyes.
I said, hey, Mr. Cunningham. How's your entailment getting along?
He turns his face away from her completely.
Don't you remember me, Mr. Cunningham? I'm Jean Louise Finch.
She rapidly blinks her eyes.
You brought us some hickory nuts one early morning, remember? We had a talk. haven't got my daddy to come out and thank you. I go to school with your boy. I go to school with Walter. He's a nice boy. Tell him hey for me, won't you? You know something, Mr. Cunningham? Entailments are bad. Entailments.
The old Sarum men stroke their faces uncomfortably. Atticus glowers behind his round eyeglasses.
Atticus, I was just saying to Mr. Cunningham that entailments were bad, but not to worry. Takes a long time sometimes.
Atticus puts his arm around her.
What's the matter?
Walter Cunningham turns his face away. Under her father's arm, Scout lowers her head.
I sure meant no harm, Mr. Cunningham.
He turns his jowly face toward her and straightens his back.
No harm taken, young lady.
He swallows, his lips quivering, then looks her in the eye.
I'll tell Walter you said hey. Let's clear out of here. Let's go, boys.
The mob starts to break up. The man who grabbed Jem rubs his chin and neck. The old farmer in front turns, takes a look back, then walks to his car. Atticus's eyes dart as he watches them spread out. As the cars leave town, he stands tall on the prison stoop. Relaxing his weight on his long legs, he squeezes Scout closer under the crook of his arm.
Now you go home. All of you. I'll be there later.
Jem trudges down the jailhouse steps.
Come on.
Scout and Dill follow wearily. Lamplight glows on the smooth, angled features of Atticus's face. With vigilant eyes, he watches the children cross toward the village green. He paces a circle in front of the wooden chair below the barred windows of the county jailhouse. In the darkness, the floor lamp sprays a dim beam of light up the building's brick walls.
Mr. Finch? They're gone?
They're gone. They won't bother you anymore.
He cranes his neck toward the unseen Tom Robinson. Picking up the thick law book, he settles himself in the chair for the night. In the morning, the children sit on the curb and watch mule-driven carriages headed for the town square.
Morning, Mr. Spike. How do you
ever see so many people? Just like on Saturday.
Jem suddenly jumps up and trots for the square.
Where are you going?
I can't stand it any longer. I'm going downtown to the courthouse and walk.
You better not. You know what Atticus said?
I don't care if he did. I'm not going to miss the most exciting thing that ever happened in this town.
Scout and Dill look at each other, shrug, and run after him. At the courthouse steps, townspeople help themselves to chips of ice from two large melting blocks. The children scoop up some in their hands and head inside. At the courtroom door, a pressing crowd blocks the entrance.
It's packed solid. They're standing all along the back.
Jem spots someone entering.
Reverend!
A black pastor.
Huh? Reverend Sipes, are you going upstairs?
Yes, I am.
In the courtroom, spectators fill the benches behind Atticus and the prosecutor. An upper balcony overlooking the floor fills with black townspeople.
Thank you, Brother Jones, for holding this. Come on, children.
Reverend Sipes leads the children to the balcony's front row, where they squeeze in between the railing and the seats. From their overhead view, they see a guard escort in a tall black man in overalls. At the defendant's table, the guards unlock the man's handcuffs while Atticus looks on. Bob Ewell sits with the spectators beside a young woman wearing a print dress and a headband. Long bangs cover her eyes and she slumps forward clumsily. The defendant takes his seat. Tom Robinson is a dark-skinned man in his 30s with small, deep-set eyes.
This court's now in session. Everybody rise.
The full courtroom stands. Later, Jem leans on the balcony rail and listens to Sheriff Tate's testimony.
On the night of August 21st, I was just leaving my office to go home when Bob, Mr. Ewell, came in. Very excited he was, and he said to get to his house as quick as I could, that his girl had been raped. I got in my car and went out there as fast as I could. She was pretty well beat up. I asked her if Tom Robinson beat her like that. She said yes, he had. I asked if he'd taken advantage of her. She said yes, he did. That's all there was to it. Thank you.
From his seat, Atticus questions the sheriff.
Did anybody call a doctor, Sheriff?
No, sir.
Why not?
Well, I didn't think it was necessary. She was pretty well beat up. Something sure happened. It was obvious.
Tom listens rigidly.
Now, Sheriff, you say that she was mighty beat up. In what way?
Well, she was beaten around the head. There were bruises already coming on her arms. She had a black eye starting.
Which eye?
Let's see. It's her left.
Well, now, was that, was her left facing you? Or looking the way that you were?
Yes, that would make it her right eye. It was her right eye, Mr. Finch. Now I remember. She was beat up on that side of her face.
Atticus walks between the jury box by the window and Heck Tate, then stands facing him.
Which side again, Heck?
The right side. She had bruises on her arms. She showed me her neck. There were definite finger marks on her gullet.
Atticus turns to the jury of 12 white men.
All around her neck, at the back of her throat.
He demonstrates.
I'd say they were all around.
Atticus takes his hands from around his own neck and returns to his seat. On the bench, sleepy-eyed Judge Taylor raises his eyebrows.
Witness may be seated.
Bob Ewell purses his thin lips.
Robert E. Lee Ewell.
The slack-jawed prosecutor follows him to the stand, sucking on a pencil.
Raise your hand on the Bible, please. You solemn swear to tell truth, whole truth, nothing but truth, that God.
I do.
Sit down, please.
Ewell squeezes his tall frame into the chair and eyes Atticus.
Now, Mr. Ewell, you tell us, just in your own words, what happened on August 21st.
Well, that night, I was coming in from the wood with a load of kindling, and I heard Mayella screaming as I got to the fence. So I dropped my kindling, and I run just as fast as I could, but I run into the fence. But when I got loose, I run up to the window, and I seen him with my Mayella.
Mayella, the girl with bangs, bites her lip.
What did you do after you saw the defendant?
I run around the house trying to get in, but he done run through the front door just ahead of me. But I seen who it was, all right. I seen it.
The crowd of spectators ripples with movement.
And I run in the house and pull me out of laying on a floor squat. And I run to Mr. Tate just as quick as I could.
He sits back and narrows his eyes.
Thank you, Mr. Hugh.
Ewell starts to leave the stand and bumps shoulders with Atticus. Ewell showboats for the crowd.
Would you mind if I just ask you a few questions, Mr. Ewell?
No, sir, Mr. Santa, sure would.
Grinning, he returns to the leather-backed chair in front of the judge's bench.
Folks are doing a lot of running that night. Let's see now. You say that you ran to the house, you ran to the window. You ran inside, you ran to Mayella, and you ran to Sheriff Tate. Did you, during all this running, run for a doctor?
There wasn't no need to. I seen you done it.
Now, Mr. Ewell, you've heard the sheriff's testimony. Do you agree with his description of Mayella's injuries?
I agree with everything Mr. Tate said. Her eye was blacked. She was mighty beat up. Mighty beat up.
Now, Mr. Ewell, can you read and write?
Yes, Mr. Finch, I can read and I can write.
Atticus gets a pad and pencil.
Good.
He hands them to Ewell.
And will you write your name, please, right there. Show us.
Yule takes the pad in his right hand, the pencil in his left, and glances up at Atticus, now standing behind him. With short, quick movements, he forms the letters of his name across the middle of the paper. In the balcony, Jem grips the railing. Scout and Dill rest their chins on it. A man standing behind the Reverend wipes his throat with a handkerchief. On the stand, Bob Yule finishes his signature and hands the pad back to Atticus.
What's so interesting?
You're left-handed, Mr. Yule.
What's that got to do with it, Judge? I'm a God-fearing man. That Atticus Finch, he's trying to take advantage of me. You got to watch tricky lawyers like Atticus Finch.
Quiet. Quiet, sir. Now, the witness may take his seat.
Yule crushes his hat in his fist as he walks with swaggering steps past Atticus to the front row. His shoulder shoves Mayella over as he sits down.
Mayella Violet Yule.
Mayella, not more than 20, blinks her watery eyes. The prosecutor, Gilmer, puts his pencil in his mouth and leads her by the arm to the bailiff, then waits with his hand on his hip.
Put your hand on the Bible, please.
She wipes her palm on her dress.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, save your God.
She nods.
Sit down, please.
Mayella sits gingerly and tucks her skirt around her.
Now, Mayella, suppose you tell us just what happened, huh?
Well, sir, I was sitting on the porch and he come along. Well, there's this old shipper over in the yard. And I said, you come in here, boy, and bust up this shift rope, and I'll give you a nickel. So he come on in the yard, and I go in the house to get him the nickel. And I turn around, and before I know it, he's on me. And I fought and hollered, but he had me around the neck, and he hit me again and again. And the next thing I knew, Papa's in the room, a stand over me, hollering, who done it? Who done it?
Thank you, Mayella. Your witness, Evans.
Court spectators fan themselves briskly.
Now, Miss Mayella, is your father good to you? I mean, is he easy to get along with?
She shrugs her shoulders.
That's tolerable.
Except when he's drinking.
Her pudgy face freezes.
When he's riled, has he ever beaten you?
Gilmer scowls over his chewed pencil and works his tongue over his teeth.
My paw's never touched a hair on my head in my life.
Atticus hooks his thumbs in his vest pockets and paces toward the jury box.
You say that you asked Tom to come in and chop up a... what was it?
A shifro.
Was that the first time that you ever asked him to come inside the fence?
Yes.
Didn't you ever ask him to come inside the fence before?
Mayella flinches. She sticks out her lip, then draws it back and shrugs.
I might have...
Can you remember any other occasion?
No.
Her hair swings when she shakes her head.
You say he caught me, he choked me, and he took advantage of me. Is that right?
She licks her bottom lip, then nods woodenly.
Do you remember him beating you about the face?
She peers through her bangs.
No. I don't recollect if he hit me.
Suddenly, she turns to face the spectators.
I mean, yes, he hit me. He hit me.
The spectators watch Tom, who sits blank-faced with his hands in his lap.
Thank you. Now, will you identify the man who beat you?
Most certainly will. Sitting right yonder.
She glances away from Tom and points at him.
Tom, will you stand up, please? Let Miss Mayella have a good long look at you.
Tom stands behind the defendant's table. Mayella folds her arms and sucks in her cheeks, still avoiding his gaze.
Tom, will you catch this, please?
He tosses a water glass from the judge's bench. Tom catches it in his right palm.
Thank you. Now then, this time, will you please catch it with your left hand?
I can't, sir.
Why can't you?
I can't use my left hand at all. I got it caught in a cotton gin when I was 12 years old. All my muscles were tore loose.
Mayella gapes in horror. She jumps at the sound of the gavel. Atticus puts the glass down on the judge's bench. In the balcony, Reverend Sykes shakes his head. Atticus stands beside Tom Robinson at the defendant's table.
Is this the man who raped you?
Most certainly is.
Her cheeks flutter.
How?
She attempts a coy smile and shrugs.
Oh, how? He done it. He just done it.
You have testified that he choked you and he beat you. You didn't say that he sneaked up behind you and knocked you out cold, but that you turned around and there he was. You want to tell us what really happened?
I got something to say. And then I ain't gonna say no more. He took advantage of me.
The muscles strain on her slender neck.
And if you find fancy gentlemen ain't gonna do nothing about it, then you're just a bunch of lousy, yellow, stinking cowards. The whole bunch of you. And your fancy airs don't come to nothing. Your mammon and your Miss May Ellen, it don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch.
She bolts from the witness stand. Her father and Sheriff Tate grab her in the aisle before she can reach the door. With her fists clutched at her chest, she returns to her seat and ducks her head to her knees. Judge Taylor sets down his gavel and glowers at the court.
Atticus?
Atticus shakes his head and turns to his chair.
Mr. Gilmer?
The prosecutor stands.
The state rests, Judge.
At the defense table, Tom Robinson grips the chair with his good arm and looks pleadingly at Atticus. Atticus nods.
Tom Robinson takes the stand.
In the balcony, the black townspeople sit motionless. Atticus stands with Tom, whose moist brown eyes fix on him. He walks alone to the front of the courtroom where the bailiff waits holding a Bible.
Put your hand on the Bible.
He swears with his right hand.
Some swear, tell truth, hold truth, nothing but truth, except God. I do. Sit down.
As Tom's eyes dart over the crowd, Bob Ewell takes his arm from around Mayella. Atticus approaches the stand, and Tom adjusts his limp hand in his lap with his right arm.
Tom, were you acquainted with Mayella Violet Ewell?
Yes, sir. I had to pass her place going to and from the field every day.
Is there any other way to go?
No, sir. None I know of.
And did she ever speak to you?
Why, yes, sir. I'd tip my hat when I'd go by. And one day she asked me to come inside the fence and bust up a shiffer rope for her. She gave me the hatchet and I broke it up. And then she said, I reckon I'll have to give you a nickel, won't I? And I said, no, ma'am, there ain't no charge. And I went home. Mr. Finch, that was way last spring. Way over a year ago.
And did you ever go on the place again?
Taking a breath, he meets Atticus's gaze.
Yes, sir.
When?
His eyes drift from Atticus's.
Well, I went lots of times. Seemed like every time I passed by yonder, she'd have some little something for me to do. chop at kindling and toting water for.
Atticus paces toward the jury, his hands clasped in front of him. Drawing his eyebrows together, he looks at the ceiling.
Tom? What happened to you on the evening of August 21st of last year?
His hands now behind his back, Atticus faces away from Tom between him and the jurors. Tom glances at them.
Mr. Finch, I was going home as usual that evening. When I passed the Ewell place, Miss Mayella was on the porch, like she said she was. And she said for me to come there and help her a minute. Well, I went inside the fence and I looked around for some kindling to work on. But I didn't see none. And then she said to come in the house. She has a door needs fixing. So I follows her inside and I looked at the door and it looked all right. And she shut the door. All the time I was wondering why it was so quiet-like. And then it come to me. There was not a child on the place. And I said, Miss Mayella, where are the children? She said, they all gone to get ice creams. She said it took her a slap year to save 7 nickels. But she done it. And they all gone to town.
What did you say then?
Oh, I said something like, why, Miss Mayella, that's right nice of you to treat him. She said, you think so? Well, I said, I best be going. I couldn't do nothing for her. And she said, oh, yes, I could. And I asked her what? And she said to just step on the chair yonder and get that box down from on top of the shifero. So I done like she told me, and I was reaching. When the next thing I know, she grabbed me around the legs.
The courtroom spectators stare at each other. Bob Ewell squirms in his seat.
She scared me so bad, I hopped down and turned the chair over. That was the only thing. Only furniture disturbed in the room, Mr. Finch. I swear, when I left it.
Tom holds up his head and sets his jaw.
And what happened after you turned the chair over?
Tom looks at Atticus pleadingly, then glances away, nostrils flaring.
Tom?
Mayella chews her lower lip. In the jury box, the white men's eyes focus only on Tom.
You've sworn to tell the whole truth. Will you do it?
Tom's dark eyes fill with tears.
What happened after that?
His head rocks from side to side as he struggles to answer.
Mr. Finch, I got Tom off the chair, and I turned around. She sort of jumped on me. She hugged me around the waist. She reached up and kissed me on the face. She said she'd never kissed a grown man before, and she might as well kiss me. She says for me to kiss her back. And I said, Miss Mayella, let me out of here. And I tried to run. Mr. Ewell cussed at her from the window. He said he's gonna kill her.
Mayella's lips part slightly. Beside her, her father wears a sour-faced scowl. On the stand, Tom sweats.
And what happened after that?
Tom gulps back a sob.
I was running so fast. I don't know what happened.
Atticus exhales a short breath, shifts his weight on his feet, and looks down at his client.
Tom? Did you rape Mayella Ewell?
Lips tightening, he shakes his head.
I did not, sir.
Did you harm her in any way?
A tear creeps slowly down Tom's cheek. He He swallows and forces his straining face to answer.
I didn't answer.
At the prosecution table, Attorney Gilmer sits with one leg thrown over the arm of his chair and gnaws the pencil in his mouth. Pulling himself to his feet, he hitches up his trousers and crosses the courtroom to the jury box. He rests a hand on his hip and points the chewed pencil at Tom.
Robinson? You're pretty good at busting up Schiffer robes and kindling with one hand, aren't you? Strong enough to choke the breath out of a woman and sling her to the floor?
I never done that, sir.
But you're strong enough to.
I reckon so, sir.
Gilmer clamps his teeth around the pencil and walks in front of the jurors.
How come you so all-fired anxious to do that woman's chores?
Tom shrugs one shoulder.
Looks like she didn't have nobody to help her. Like I said, she...
With Mr. Yule and 7 children on a place? You did all this chopping and work out of sheer goodness, boy? You mighty good fella, it seems. Did all that for not one penny.
Yes, sir. I felt right sorry for her. She seemed...
At the corner of the jury box, Gilmer turns. His mouth falls open with the pencil hanging out. Returning to the witness stand, Gilmer leans his elbow on the judge's bench above Tom's head. His striped tie hangs twisted from his collar.
You felt sorry for her. A white woman? You felt sorry for her.
Atticus sits back in his chair. A shadow of beard darkens his chin, and a forelock of hair falls over his brow. Tom raises his eyes and blinks. Later, the spectators shift restlessly, fanning themselves and looking at Tom and Atticus. Judge Taylor rocks his high-backed chair from side to side behind the bench. He nods at Atticus, who stands. In the balcony, Jem's lone white face peers over the wooden rail. Reverend Sykes sits behind him, his back ramrod straight.
To begin with, this case should never have come to trial. The state has not produced one iota of medical evidence that the crime Tom Robinson is charged with ever took place. It has relied instead upon the testimony of 2 witnesses whose evidence has not only been called into serious question on cross-examination, but has been flatly contradicted by the defendant. Now, there is circumstantial evidence to indicate that Mayella Yule was beaten savagely by someone who led almost exclusively with his left. And Tom Robinson now sits before you, having taken the oath with the only good hand he possesses, his right.
With deliberate steps, he walks toward Gilmer, who sits with his suit jacket open and his leg dangling over his chair. Behind him sit Mayella and Bob Yule.
I have nothing but pity in my heart for the chief witness for the state. She is the victim of cruel poverty and ignorance.
He shakes his head sadly and looks away from them.
But my pity does not extend so far as to her putting a man's life at stake, which she has done in an effort to get rid of her own guilt. Now I say guilt, gentlemen, because it was guilt that motivated her. She's committed no crime. She has merely broken a rigid and time-honored code of our society. A code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst, is unfit to live with. She must destroy the evidence of her offense. But what was the evidence of her offense? Tom Robinson. A human being. She must put Tom Robinson away from her.
He pushes the air with his hands.
Tom Robinson was to her a daily reminder of what she did. Now, what did she do? She tempted a Negro. She was white, and she tempted a Negro. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She kissed a black man. Not an old uncle, but a strong, young Negro man. No code mattered to her before she broke it, but it came crashing down on her afterwards.
Stepping back in front of the Yules, he glares at Mayella, who drags the back of her hand across her mouth.
The witnesses for the state, with the exception of the sheriff of Macon County, have presented themselves to you gentlemen, to this court, in the cynical confidence that their testimony would not be doubted. Confident that you gentlemen would go along with them on the assumption. The evil assumption that all Negroes lie. All Negroes are basically immoral beings. All Negro men are not to be trusted around our women.
He waves a dismissing hand at the Yules.
An assumption that one associates with minds of their caliber. And which is in itself, gentlemen, a lie. Which I do not need to point out to you.
His eyes dart over the jurors' faces. When he speaks again, he walks back toward the Yules.
And so, a quiet, humble, respectable Negro who has had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman has had to put his word against two white people.
Two spectators seated beside the Yules crane their necks to look over at them.
The defendant is not guilty. But somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal. I'm no idealist to believe firmly in the integrity of our courts and of our jury system. That's no ideal to me. That is a living, working reality.
He points a finger sharply through the air.
I am confident that you gentlemen will review without passion the evidence that you have heard, come to a decision, and restore this man to his family.
He stands before the jury with his hands in his vest pockets and his teeth clenched in a tight-lipped frown.
In the name of God, do your duty.
From the balcony, Jem watches his father lean over the jury box.
In the name of God, believe Tom Robinson.
Atticus gradually stands up straight and steps back around the defense table to his seat. At his side, Tom turns and looks at Atticus, who sits with his head bowed. The spectators barely move, except to stir the air with their fans. The packed courtroom sits and waits. After dark, spectators return to the courthouse. In the balcony, Dill sleeps against the Reverend, who cools himself by waving his hat. Jem still leans on the railing, watching the crowd below.
How long has the jury been out now, Reverend?
Well, let's see. Almost 2 hours now.
Scout sits on the floor.
I think that's an awful good sign. Don't you?
Downstairs, the jury enters through a door behind the judge's bench. The white men in overalls and work pants pass in front of Atticus. Only one of them looks at him at all. In the balcony, the black townspeople rest their faces in their hands. An officer enters, escorting the handcuffed Tom Robinson. Atticus glances up, sees Tom, and turns in his seat to face him. One of the spectators talks behind her fan as she glances at Tom. Atticus watches the guard unlock Tom's chain, then Tom takes his seat beside him. The bailiff strolls in from another door ahead of Judge Taylor.
Court's now in session. Everybody rise.
Judge Taylor dries his face with a handkerchief as he enters. Two latecomers hurry down the center aisle and stand before their seats as the crowd waits for the judge to be seated. Atticus and Tom stare straight ahead as they sit down. Those in the balcony perch on the edge of their chairs.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
The judge swings his chair around to look at Tom.
Will the defendant please rise and face the jury?
Tom stands up, tall and straight. In the jury box, a stoop-shouldered man stands before the judge.
What is your verdict?
We find the defendant guilty as charged.
The spectators sit stone-faced as Tom lowers himself slowly into his chair. In the balcony, Jem buries his face in his arm. Scout stares through the balcony rails from her seat on the floor. The judge looks the courtroom over, then leans forward across the bench.
Gentlemen, this jury is dismissed.
He gives the bailiff a quick nod, then leaves the bench for his chambers.
Court's adjourned.
The judge tosses the chamber door shut behind him. As Jim watches the jurors disperse, his face hardens. Downstairs, the officers put Tom back in chains.
I'll go to see Helen first thing tomorrow morning. I told her not to be disappointed. We'd probably lose this one. Tom.
Tom squares his shoulders and faces Atticus, then leaves with Sheriff Tate's men. The courtroom empties of spectators quickly, and soon the downstairs floor is nearly empty. The bailiff cleans off the judge's bench. Atticus speaks to the court clerk, pointing sternly at his docket sheets. The clerk and bailiff wait in the doorway as Atticus packs a thick file folder into his briefcase. Upstairs, the ebony-skinned Reverend Sykes looks across the court at Black Macomb, gathered in the balcony. One by one, people begin to stand and remain standing at their seats. Women in hats with babies bundled at their chests, working men in clean button shirts, old people in homespun clothes and overalls all look soberly down on the empty court. The Reverend rises behind Jem and Dill. The cross on his watch chain catches the light against his dark suit. He nudges Scout, still on the floor between his feet.
Miss Jean Louise, stand up.
As she pulls herself up beside him, he draws his arm around her.
Your father's passed.
Atticus lifts his briefcase, straightens his jacket, and strides down the aisle out of court under the eyes of the men and women standing in the balcony. Later, the children walk home with Atticus. Jem carries his father's briefcase, and Scout lags farther behind with her hands stuffed in her overalls pockets. From across the road, Maudie comes off her porch to meet them.
Atticus?
He turns stiffly. Then his face softens as he tips his hat to her.
I'm sorry, Atticus.
Well, thank you, Maudie.
A car approaches quickly from down the road. Heck Tate pulls up beside the two of them.
Atticus, can I see you for a minute?
He takes no notice of Maudie.
Will you excuse me?
He rests his foot on Heck's running board and leans close to the window. Maudie joins the children on the porch steps. Jem lets go of Atticus's briefcase and hides his face with his arms. Maudie absently fingers a ring on her left hand and eyes Atticus at the curbside.
Jem?
Yes, sir?
He talks through his knees at the floor.
I don't know if it'll help, but I want to say this to you.
She gazes ahead thoughtfully and talks with a tightly set mouth.
There's some men in this world who are born to do our unpleasant jobs for us. Your father's one of them.
She glances away. Age lines show under her eyes and around her mouth.
Oh, well.
By the telephone pole, Atticus leans his weight on one hip and stares across the road. Maudie and the children wait for him on the porch. He turns, steps onto the sidewalk, and walks with a stiff-legged gait toward the house. Jem and Maudie watch him expectantly with raised eyebrows.
What's the matter, Atticus?
He looks at the ground as he plods toward them.
Tom Robinson's dead.
He turns the wrinkled back of his linen jacket to them. Maudie opens her mouth, then closes it.
They were taking him to Abbotsville for safekeeping. Tom broke loose and ran. The deputy called out to him to stop. Tom didn't stop. He shot at him to wound him and missed his aim. Killed him.
Maudie covers her mouth with her hand. Her eyes flash up at Atticus.
The deputy says...
He lifts a hand, then drops it.
Tom just ran like a crazy man.
He strokes his mouth with a tense thumb. Anxiously, he raises his fist with a thumb stiffly extended.
Last thing I told him was not to lose a heart, that we'd ask for an appeal.
He looks at the ground. Turning over his shoulder to Maudie, he sets his jaw and shows her the raised thumb.
We had such a good chance.
He shakes his rigid fist, weakly punching the air.
We had more than a good chance.
He turns his face away again. His hand opens and waves the chance away. Jem drops his head over his knees again. Scout stares distantly at the ground. Dill sits in a knot with his knees drawn up to his chin.
Go out and tell his family. You look after the children, Marty.
Jem trots after him up the driveway.
Atticus, you want me to go with you?
No, son. I better go out there alone.
Atticus!
He catches up to his father.
I'm going with you.
Atticus wearily tosses his head toward the garage. Later, as they round a dirt road, their headlights shine on the Robinson porch. Several black men and a few women sit outside. They stare cautiously at the approaching car. As Atticus pulls his long body out of the driver's seat, a stocky, dark-skinned man in overalls steps forward.
Hello, Mr. Finch. I'm Spence, Tom's father.
Hello, Spence.
They shake hands firmly.
Is Helen here?
Yes, sir. She's inside, lying down, trying to get a little sleep. We've been talking about the appeal, Mr. Finch. How long do you think it'll take?
Spence, there isn't going to be any appeal. Not now. Tom is dead.
Dead.
Helen Robinson bursts out and stares at Atticus, who removes his hat and steps toward her.
Helen?
She collapses into the arms of the nearest man. In the car, Jem stares wide-eyed as his father helps Mrs. Robinson to her feet and escorts her inside. Bob Ewell appears out of the woods, his hands in his pockets and a cigarette burning between his lips. Spence and the Robinson women follow Helen into the small house. Ewell flicks the cigarette away and steps closer to the men in the front yard.
Why? Go inside and tell Atticus Finch I said come out here. Gone, boy.
An old man, twice Ewell's age, tromps up the porch steps. From the front seat of the car, Jem catches Ewell's eye, causing them both to shrink back. Ewell recovers and stares ahead as Atticus comes out of the house. He stands on the porch in his light linen suit with his hands held loosely at his sides. One of the Robinson men holds out Atticus's hat, and he glances away from Ewell long enough to nod his thanks. As Atticus marches down the porch steps, the black men form a wall behind him. He stands toe to toe with Ewell, who grinds his jaw behind closed lips. His spit splashes Atticus in the face. Ewell braces as Atticus steps forward and locks the smaller man in his sights. The dripping spit streaks down Atticus's tightly clenched cheek. Ewell watches him, rocking on his toes as if he means to run. Atticus reaches into his pocket and brings out a handkerchief, which he drags roughly across his face, cleaning it with one wipe. Looking Bob Ewell up and down, he walks past him and gets behind the wheel of his car. Ewell's bristled face shines in Atticus's headlights, then falls into darkness again as the car pulls away.
By October, things had settled down again. I still looked for Boo every time I went by the Radley place.
At dusk, Scout leans on the Radley fence.
This night, my mind was filled with Halloween. There was to be a pageant representing our county's agricultural products. I was to be a ham. Jem said he would escort me to the school auditorium. Thus began our longest journey together.
Later that night, the last horse-drawn carriage leaves the schoolyard and the auditorium lights go out. Jem sits on the school steps, wearing knickers, suit jacket, and tie. Impatiently, he stomps to the front door.
Scout! Yeah? Will you come on? Everybody's gone.
I can't go home like this.
Well, I'm going. It's almost 10. Atticus will be waiting for us.
Scout comes out barefoot, dressed as a papier-mâché ham.
A fool walking home like this.
Well, it's not my fault you lost your dress.
I didn't lose it. Just can't find it.
Where are your shoes?
Can't find them either.
You can get them tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Sunday.
You can get the janitor to let you in. Come on.
They walk home through a dark patch of woods. Scout's ham costume covers her from head to knees, without armholes, and has the milk bottle shape of a ham with the shank bone attached. Though a rectangular slit allows her to see, she tangles herself in a bush.
Here, Scout, let me hold on to you before you break your neck.
He holds her by the ham's flat top. He looks behind them.
What's the matter?
Hush a minute, Scout.
Skeletal tree branches throw shadows across the path where it curves away behind them.
Thought I heard something.
He straightens up and shrugs.
Come on.
Carrying a crooked stick in one hand and resting the other on Scout, he glances behind them as they walk. Scout glares through her eye hole.
Jimmy, you're trying to scare me.
Shh.
No, I'm too old.
Be quiet.
Heard an old dog then.
It's not that. I hear it when we're walking along. When we stop, I don't hear it anymore.
Oh, yeah, my costume rustling. Halloween gets you.
She takes a few steps forward alone, then stops. Her freckled nose pokes out of the costume into the light.
I hear it now. I bet it's just old Cecil Jacob trying to scare me. Cecil Jacob, send a big one!
Behind them, the flattened path stands empty except for waving bare trees. As Jem leads them on again, he keeps one ear cocked over his shoulder. Scout tilts forward in her ham costume to see through the eye hole. The path takes them around another turn, cutting off their view of the woods behind them. Jem hurries their steps, and Scout jogs awkwardly beside on her bare feet. Suddenly, she stops short. Hands grab Jem by the neck and push Scout to the ground. The unseen attacker pushes Jem onto his back.
Run, Scout! Run, Scout! Run, run!
He slips between his attacker's legs and helps Scout to her feet. The man grabs Jem by the hair. Scout falls again. The attacker, a white man, batters Jem's shoulder. Scout tries to stand on her own. Jem flies through the air to a patch of dried grass. His legs drop limply. Scout rushes right into their attacker's arms. Through her costume eye hole, she sees another man grab from the other side. The two men fight viciously, their hands thrashing in front of Scout's narrow view. A long arm in a pale striped shirt grips the attacker, whose hand claws helplessly. They smash into the sides of Scout's costume. She turns sideways in it to better see the struggle. Her round eye flashes wide open. The shadows weaken. Scout's peering eye follows something that falls to the ground. A man's legs in light-colored pants walk across the dusty path away from Scout. She squeezes as close to the eye hole as she can. Her staring eye tracks the rescuer around her and out of the woods. Later, outside the woods, two figures head down the road past the Radley fence and the streetlight pole. The pale-shirted man hurries toward their house, with Jem in the cradle of his arms. Scout pulls off the cumbersome ham and follows them in her slip. She runs with wobbly steps across the pebbled road. As soon as Jem's rescuer enters their house, Scout sprints the rest of the way.
Scout! Scout!
Atticus scoops her into his arms.
What happened? What happened?
I swear I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah. You go and tell Dr. Reynolds to come over.
Yes, sir.
Inside, he sets her down.
You all right?
Yes, sir.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
Jem lies in his bed. Down the hall, Atticus turns the hand crank on the telephone.
Sheriff Tate, please.
Atticus, is Jem dead?
No. He's unconscious. We won't know how badly he's hurt until the doctor gets here. Heck? Atticus Finch. Someone's been after my children.
Later, Dr. Reynolds examines Jem.
He's got a bad break, so far as I can tell. Somebody tried to wring his arm off.
Calpurnia holds Jem's bedroom door for the doctor. Outside the room, Scout hooks on her overalls.
I'll be right back, Atticus.
On the porch, Dr. Reynolds passes Sheriff Tate carrying in Scout's ham costume. His eyes glare fiercely in the bright hallway light. He sets the costume on the floor outside Jem's room, where Atticus and Scout sit on the bed. Removing his hat, he grips the wooden footboard of Jem's bed and stares past Atticus at the boy. Jem lies covered to the chin, still unconscious, with a blackening right eye. Atticus stiffens and looks the sheriff up and down.
This is Heck.
Heck's mouth twitches as his jaw juts forward thoughtfully.
Bob Ewell's lying on the ground under that tree down yonder with a kitchen knife stuck up under his ribs.
His brows form a shelf over his baggy eyes.
He's dead, Mr. Finch.
Atticus steals a glance over his shoulder at Jem's round, bruised face. He stands mechanically before Heck Tate and stares at him in open-mouthed disbelief.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
Heck looks gravely from Atticus to Jem to Scout.
He's not going to bother these children anymore. Miss Scout, you think you could tell us what happened?
I don't of a sudden, somebody grabbed me, knocked me down on the ground. Jim found me then. Then Mr. Yule, I reckon, grabbed him again, and Jim hollered. Then somebody grabbed me. Mr. Yule, I guess. Somebody grabbed him. And then I heard someone panting and coughing.
Standing, she wraps her arms around the bedpost.
Then I saw someone carrying Jim.
Well, who was it?
Her eyes drift to a spot beyond Sheriff Tate.
Well, there he is, Mr. Tate. He can tell you his name.
A man ducks out from behind the bedroom door when Heck pulls it aside. His ghostly pale face stares at the sheriff like a frightened animal's. He is tall and thin. His long arms and legs are dressed in baggy clothes. Tufts of fine downy hair crown his smooth, high forehead. His puffy, gentle eyes soften when he looks at Scout.
Hey, Boo.
Miss Jean Louise, Mr. Arthur Radley. I believe he already knows you.
Atticus wipes his neck with his handkerchief.
Heck, let's go out on the front porch.
A smile creeps over Scout's mouth as she stands by the bedpost. Slowly, she approaches Boo in the corner of the room.
You'd like to say goodnight to Jim, Mr. Arthur?
She holds out her small hand and he takes it. In his bed, Jim's splinted left arm lies straight out from his side. He sleeps soundly as Scout and Boo come to his bedside. Boo has a boy's hairless face and a delicate, timid mouth. He drops Scout's hand and starts to reach, then withdraws and tucks his fingers against his leg.
You can pet him, Mr. Arthur. He's asleep. You couldn't if he was awake, though. He wouldn't let you.
Boo gazes in wonder at Jim.
Go ahead.
Steadying himself gently against the mattress, he leans over Jim and brushes his palm over Jim's fringy brown hair. In the light from the bedside lamp, Jim's cheeks appear fat and silky like a baby's. Boo straightens again, his lips parted in curious amazement and his eyes fixed on Jim. Firmly, he takes Scout's hand. On the porch, Heck stares at the yard while Atticus paces outside Jem's window. Scout pushes open the screen door and brings Boo outside.
Go sit in the swing, Mr. Arthur.
They cross between the two men.
Heck, I guess that the thing to do is...
Clutching his handkerchief, Atticus strokes his forehead.
Good Lord. I must be losing my memory. I can't remember whether Jim is 12 or 13. Anyway, it'll have to come before the county court.
Heck's mouth tugs down at the corners.
Of course, it's a clear-cut case of self-defense. I'll run down to the office.
Mr. Finch. You think Jim killed Bob Yule? Is that what you think? Your boy never stabbed him.
Atticus stares blankly at Heck. His eyes dart over the sheriff's face, then drift in thought. He looks at the porch swing. Scout follows her father's glance to Boo, who sits with his hands in his lap. Heck Tate twists his wedding band and sets his jaw.
Bob Yule fell on his knife. He killed himself.
The men tentatively catch each other's eyes.
There's a black man dead for no reason. Now the man responsible for it is dead. Let the dead bury the dead this time, Mr. Finch. I never heard tell it was against the law for any citizen to do his utmost to prevent a crime from being committed, which is exactly what he did. But maybe you'll tell me it's my duty to tell the town all about it, not to hush it up. Well, you know what'll happen then. All the ladies in Macomb, including my wife, will be knocking on his door, bringing angel food cakes. To my way of thinking. Taking the one man who's done you in this town a big service and dragging him with his shy ways into the limelight. To me, that's a sin. It's a sin. And I'm not about to have it on my head. I may not be much, Mr. Finch, but I'm still sheriff of Macon County. And Bob Ewell fell on his knife. Good night, sir.
He strides off the porch, leaving Atticus leaning against a column. Wearily, Atticus stands straight and takes a step toward the house. He stops in front of the screen door, pockets his handkerchief, and looks down the length of the porch at Scout. Boo crosses his long legs at the ankles and watches the night as Scout lowers herself to the floor. Checking Boo over her shoulder, she walks toward Atticus. He lifts her onto a chair before him and grips her lovingly by the shoulders. On the swing, Boo gently rocks himself and watches them. Scout blinks and faces her father.
Mr. Tate was right.
She swallows hard under his questioning gaze.
What do you mean?
Well, it would be sort of like shooting a mockingbird, wouldn't it?
Atticus embraces her in his strong arms. Outside Jem's lighted window, Boo stoops to see through the sheer lace curtains. Atticus lets Scout go and carefully walks toward Boo. Beside Atticus's gentlemanly figure, Boo looks like a rangy teenage boy. The blonde hair on the back of his round head is as smooth as a child's.
Thank you, Arthur.
He extends his hand. Boo looks at it uncertainly, then shakes it.
Thank you for my children.
Atticus smiles, releases Boo's hand, then walks back into the house.
Neighbors bring food with death, and flowers with sickness, and little things in between. Boo was our neighbor. He gave us 2 soap dolls, a broken watch and chain, a knife, and our lives.
Later, Scout walks Boo home, her left hand in the crook of his elbow.
One time, Atticus said, "You never really knew a man until you stood in his shoes and walked around in them."
Scout looks into the dark house through the screen door as it shuts behind Boo.
Just standing on the Radley porch was enough. The summer that had begun so long ago had ended, and another summer had taken its place, and a fall, and Boo Radley had come out. I was to think of these days many times, of Jim and Dill and Boo Radley and Tom Robinson and Atticus.
Later, in Jim's room, Scout climbs into her father's lap and he hugs her to his chest.
He would be in Jim's room all night. And he would be there when Jim waked up in the morning.
Our view pulls away from the lighted window, the porch swing, and the Finch's home. Words appear. The end. A Universal International presentation of a Pakula Mulligan Brentwood Productions picture. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston, with funding provided by Gordon and Laura Gund, described by Robin Sitton, descriptions read by Rena Baskin. Major funding for DVS is provided by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. Remaining opening credits: Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch, John Megna as Dill, Frank Overton as Sheriff Tate, Rosemary Murphy as Miss Maudie, Ruth White as Miss Dubose, Brock Peters as Tom Robinson, Estelle Evans as Calpurnia, Paul Fix as Judge Taylor, Colin Wilcox as Mayella Ewell, James Anderson as Bob Ewell, Alice Ghostly as Aunt Stephanie, Robert Duvall as Arthur Radley, William Wyndham as Gilmer, Crayon Denton as Walter Cunningham, and Richard Hale as Nathan Radley. Introducing Mary Badham as Scout and Philip Alford as Jem. Based upon Harper Lee's novel To Kill a Mockingbird. Director of Photography, Russell Harlan, ASC. Art Director, Henry Bumstead. Set Decorator, Oliver Emmert. Sound, Walden O. Watson and Corson Jowell. Production Manager, Ernest B. Wemeyer. Assistant to Producer, Isabel Halliburton. Film Editor, Aaron Stell, ACE. Costumes, Rosemary O'Dell. Men's Wardrobe, Seth Banks. Makeup, Bud Westmore. Hairstylist, Larry Germain. Script Supervisor, Meta Rebner. Assistant Director, Joseph Kenny. Copyright 1962 by Pakula Mulligan Productions, Incorporated and Brentwood Productions, Incorporated. This picture made under the jurisdiction of IATSE, affiliated with AFL-CIO. Approved by MPAA Certificate Number 20287, Westrex Recording System. Music, Elmer Bernstein. Main titles designed by Stephen Frankfurt. Screenplay by Horton Foote. Produced by Alan J. Pakula. Directed by Robert Mulligan.